are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host, Colt Molesky, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. Make sure to check out the LockedOn.com website for all your MLB, NFL, NBA, and college coverage. Make sure you're going there to see all the great work done by all of our hosts from around the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we're going to be talking about Timberwolves basketball, specifically them taking on the Golden State Warriors. And I brought somebody on from SB Nation's Warriors page, Daniel Hardy, who is going to give us an inside look at the Warriors. Daniel, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on here. It's a pleasure to talk about the new look Timberwolves. I'm excited.
I'm excited as well. Hopefully the Timberwolves can give an interesting, we'll say, Warriors team run for the money. Let's talk about that Warriors team before we get into matchups and predictions and all that good stuff. The Warriors have had a bit of a topsy-turvy season. They are coming into this game on a three-game winning streak, but their win streak includes wins over teams like the Cavaliers, Warriors, the Bucks. That was a really good game, but it's been a very interesting year for the Warriors, and everything seems to have kind of righted the ship a little bit by Stephen Curry coming back to the team. But what has it been like in your eyes following the Warriors this year? What has been kind of the problems? Is Steph the kind of answer to all the problems, is to get them back on track, or are we going to see confrontations in this locker room again throughout the season? What's it like right now for Warriors Nation, and is it going to get better, or are things going to stay interesting?
I mean, that's a great question. I think what we're dealing with in Dub Nation is a series of first world problems. I mean, when you go from, you know, being completely trashed for like 40 years and then you become one of the greatest teams of all time, there's this like weird like transition period where you're used to things not going your way for so long. So it's kind of in the back of your mind, like, oh my God, is it over? Is it over? But then after a while, you have to realize, like, this team is, like, built for the long haul. And, you know, all the other dynasties that have been through it, you're going to see times where someone gets on your nerves because you've been with them in the trenches, in the fire, year after year, competing on the highest level. And so I think what happened earlier with Draymond and KD, just one of those things where it probably happens all the time, but when you have, you know, the defensive player of the year and, you know, a finals MVP two times and a regular season MVP going at it, everyone's eyeballs are on it. It's magnified. It was hot in the locker room. And it's one of those things where in the long run, these things probably happen a lot, but because it's the Warriors, it's magnified to the point where it just feels like the sky's falling down. And then you look up and it's like, oh wait, you know, we're getting Steph back. He's dominating. KD's looking great. Clay's looking pretty sharp. And we've been winning these games recently without Draymond, who really is the defensive anchor. So the Warriors have been pretty shorthanded for about a good month or so. But I think the Warriors have been winning so much that people think, well, you still have three All-Stars. You still get it done. There's still an adjustment period there.
Well, and there is, too, as you're starting to have to pay some of these guys over the last couple of years. I know that there's some things like Draymond taking a little bit of a pay cut definitely help, but over the last couple of years, you have seen a little bit of an erosion on their bench to where four years ago, their bench was probably one of the better ones in the league. And while I think, like, storylines like last year when their bench was criticized as one of the worst when they're actually a top 10 unit, they are losing some pieces on the bench. They are losing some just money to go out and get guys to make their bench a little deeper. And so when you do have injuries, I think there's maybe a little less flexibility as far as how well the starters have to play, how well guys like Klay Thompson, guys like Draymond Green have to play to compensate for an injury like Curry's. But I think you still see when Curry comes back and this team is fully firing, even when guys like Draymond are down, you still have a crazy good roster, and you saw flashes right at the beginning of the year when they had everybody healthy, that this team is still the same team. And so while it's easy to get sidetracked by some of these storylines, I think it's important to remember that this team is probably still going to win the championship because of these guys, and because they have a guy like Boogie Cousins who's going to join up with these guys once he gets healthy.
Dude, I mean, you hit it on the head. I kind of crack up when people are thinking, you know, it's over for the Warriors. They had an argument. Boogie Cousins is coming off of the bench with something to prove, like, that the game is going to get a lot easier, I believe, for the rest of the All-Stars, meaning the role players. Like, for example, part of the reason that our bench players look so good when Steph Curry's out there is because their job is a lot easier. He just makes everyone's job a lot easier. And when Steph Curry is not there, you're having to play like regular NBA basketball. And it's really hard. So now you can imagine what having Steph and Boogie on the floor at the same time is going to do for gravity, going to do for matchups. So now all of a sudden a guy like Jonas Jerebko is getting wide open looks in the corner. Or Sean Livingston can't get double on the block. So now these role players with less attention on them, they're going to go off, and they're going to hurt some people in the playoffs. So I think when you look at the Warriors, you can't really look at them and say, you know, regular season, I know that the 73 wins kind of like ruined it for everybody, but this is a team built for the finals. This is a team built for the playoffs. So when you're looking at it, it's like, okay, this rotation, yeah, they're not going to win probably 60 games if you're playing, you know, young Jordan Bell and Kevon Looney a lot. But in May, when those guys' minutes are shrunk down because the starters are playing big time minutes anyway, well, now, you know, 5-7 minutes of Looney or, well, I said probably like 20 minutes from Looney, but 5-7 minutes of Jordan Bell and Jerebko, they're huge because not only are they playing for short amounts of time where they can maximize their skill level, but they're also playing with some of the best players on the planet. So in the summertime, it's going to help out a lot.
Yeah, they're definitely going to hurt some feelings, especially when people if people still think that they can maybe slip past this Warriors team in the playoffs. It's going to be a rude awakening for some teams and some fan bases. But let's talk about that that DeMarcus Cousins coming back before we get into the Warriors game tonight. It's been interesting looking at the stats. You have the Warriors at third. They're averaging 116.4 points per game. They're shooting about 49% from the field as a team, 39% from three. All these stats are either better or around the same mark as last year, and they're third in offense in the NBA. And they've had teams right now. The Bucks are first. The Pelicans are second. There's been all kinds of teams in the top five as far as points. The explosion offensively in the NBA has been insane this year. The pace explosion has been insane. And it's kind of all the Warriors' fault because this is all a symptom of people trying to try. Well, it is. It's a symptom of people trying to catch up with the Warriors and with their style of play. As we see this explosion happening, is it kind of perfect that the Warriors are bringing in now this crazy good center to kind of go almost the other way a little bit with their offense and be able to attack teams in the front court at a vicious rate?
Absolutely. I mean, the Warriors have been looking for a versatile big man since even the Don Nelson days. You know, we were always looking for a guy who could pass, dribble, shoot, mm-hmm. attack the rim, and, you know, cause problems there. And it's hard to find, man. I mean, we're not all blessed to get like a Carl Anthony Towns dropping our lap or a Kevin Garnett. You know what I mean? So we've always been on the outside looking in, and our franchise's recent success was basically as a result of saying, hey, guys, we don't have a 7-foot monster we can give it to. How can we be creative and use our speed and, you know, our smaller size for advantage? So, but I think that the end goal never changed. We were always looking for a dynamic big fella. And, you know, thanks to Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, that they can kind of, you know, fill in at times and play big. But when you actually have a guy who's a legit giant, who's as versatile as Boogie is, now the conundrums that you drop on other teams, like I've been playing NBA 2K just to preview it, and you can't double anybody. And when you can't double anybody, it's like one-on-one and all five guys are Olympians. Like, the only type of team that could really deal with that would have to be a team as versatile as Minnesota. When I look at your roster, and I see you've got the big guy, you got the monster, you've got D-Rose, who is a downhill force, you've got Covington, who is a defensive, swishy monster. It's like, wait a minute, I'm starting to see if Andrew Wiggins gets together all the way, I'm seeing the formation of something in Minnesota that when I look on paper, I go, oh, okay, that's the kind of team you want to build to face the Warriors.
That's an encouraging word to hear from somebody who covers the Golden State Warriors. That said, and getting into the Timberwolves versus the Warriors a little bit here, my biggest problem with the Timberwolves going into this matchup is the backcourt is not going to be able to play very well defensively against what the Warriors can throw at you. And as good as Rose has been and Teague has been, and as much as I have enjoyed watching Rose play this year, they just do not throw the defense at backcourts that can throw them in a funk. I mean, this just happened the other night. Damian Lillard just took it to the Timberwolves, especially in the fourth quarter, to help save that game at home for Portland. And so I think the biggest advantage that the Warriors have in this game is getting Curry back, because they're not going to be able to slow him down, on especially on the outside. And really, it's going to be one of those situations where the best case scenario, and I don't want to be naive here, but it's almost the best case scenario for the Timberwolves to maybe have Rose try and shoot with Curry as opposed to try and depend on him defensively. Does that sound crazy to you?
No, when you say shoot, do you mean like literally shoot from like the 3-point range, or you mean like a shootout?
I just mean try and go trade buckets with Curry.
Yeah.
Because I can't trust Teague or Rose to, from possession to possession, to be the ones that change this game with their defense.
Right. No, I heard you saying. I mean, I went to the preseason game between the Wolves and the Warriors, and I noticed that Derrick Rose's first step was like he came back. And I was like, oh, man, like, if his first step is back, then Curry's going to have to like really work defensively on him.
Mm-hmm.
Or he has to put Clay on him. But if Curry is guarding Rose, Rose has to go at him. I mean, like you said, like there's no way to really stop Steph. But you can go at him and hope that maybe, you know, you put some tiredness on his legs and maybe his jump shot falls short because he's exhausted from guarding you. I mean, probably not. I mean, he's a two-time MVP, but that's your best chance of, you know, getting off his game. But what I do wonder is this. What kind of offense do you feel like you guys are running when you're at your best?
The best kind of offense they're running is going to be up-tempo, because when they're getting teams to stretch for the entire floor and you're having Towns run the floor with Wiggins, with Rose, then you're able to really force them into a tough spot where they either have to decide we want to play a little smaller and run with this team and try and guard them from outside, or we want to try and go a little bigger and then you're to try and combat Towns, but then those big guys are going to have to run. So your big guys have to be in shape, because Towns can run the floor with Rose and with Wiggins, but I'm not sure that a bunch of teams have the guy that can play down low with Towns and run with him. And the beautiful thing is, too, is when they do that, they sometimes throw Towns in the corner and have that big guy go out in the corner, and then you have Rose at the top of the key, and you can have Wiggins just streak towards the rim off like a little screen from the outside, from the elbow, and have a little bit open up the paint for the kind of dash into the rim. And so when they're moving faster pace, and Rose really controls that a lot when they're moving faster pace, that's probably the best version of this offense.
Now, with Wiggins, be honest with me. If you had to give him a grade for his career as a Timberwolf so far, what are you giving him?
It's a fantastic question. Right now, the body of work through 5 years would probably have to go like a C-.
Wow.
And that's coming from somebody who has been on the Wiggins bandwagon since Kansas and has been defending him tooth and nail. That said, he has been playing a lot better this year coming out of last year's performance, and so seeing him play the way he did the last couple of games, seeing him start the way he did, I know he's had a slump this year, but he has played with looseness and freeness that I don't think you've seen since before Jimmy Butler was on the team. He just played tight, constricted basketball for most of the time Jimmy Butler was around. And while I love Jimmy Butler, and while he did do some great things for the Timberwolves, Wiggins just did not play well with him and did not mix well with him in the locker room, on the court. And so having him playing more free-flowing defense has helped a lot. And Robert Covington, somebody who's going to be coming back from the little bit of a knee injury he had and sat out for the Portland game with, he's going to be back. He should be back tonight against the Warriors. Having him back in the lineup will be big, too, defensively, because I think Wiggins plays better off of his defense. And that'll be huge, especially on the outside, because when Clay and Curry are feeling it, really getting steals as opposed to getting stops and getting honest defensive stops for the Timberwolves is probably the best route. If they can get some turnovers and points off turnovers, I think that's the way they really are able to hang with this Warriors team.
Well, I think I saw a stat that said that the Wolves lead the league in steals.
Yeah, and Covington is averaging almost 3 steals a game, which is like 2 steals more than his average through his career.
Wow. So Coach Tibbs coaching that defense.
It's fantastic that they tried to build this team over a year ago that was in Tibbs' image, and then it all falls apart, and then they bring in this guy from the process, and that's the thing that might fix the Timberwolves defense.
Do you feel like your faith in this team is at a higher level now than you had before when you had Butler?
I think so. I think it feels like all of these pieces have fallen. It felt like a little bit last year that they had a puzzle and not everything fit exactly right. And then Jimmy leaves, and now you put in guys like Robert Covington, Dario Saric, who are both going to play really hard effort defense all the time. But also, they're not taking anybody's shot, right? I mean, Wiggins, I know that he's been kind of all over the place this year, but traditionally that mid-range shot or driving to the basket seems to be his comfort zone. You have guys like Towns where you're really looking for him to post up a lot. Rose and Teague are playing with the ball in their hands. Then you add Covington and Saric, guys who don't need the ball in their hands to make plays, and they're going to take a lot of outside shots. It seems like their offense slides more naturally into what the rest of the Timberwolves are trying to do versus trying to wedge in a piece because they're an all-star talent. And so I think that has helped not only the offense, but also it's helped the defense just stay free-flowing, and really it's helped make everything look smoother and look like they're actually trying to play as a team versus at the end of games, well, Butler or Towns has to score a lot, otherwise we're not winning this game. It seems like you have a bunch of guys trading out nightly who is hot and who can actually win games. And it seems like the game plan is actually predicated on matchups versus just, well, we're paying this guy a lot, or this guy is really good, and so we need him to do really well.
Right.
And well, that's,
look at the standings right now, and you guys are 10th right now, 13-13. But obviously you're right there in the mix of the AC. I think you're right, like a game and a half back or a game back. So you've got Pelicans 11, Spurs 12, Jazz 13, which is a shocker. Right now, looking at the standings, with all the drama that went down with Jimmy B and the way that the team has kind of reformed itself on the fly, when you're looking at the West, are you saying, oh, we're for sure in? And if you are feeling that way, who's coming out?
I don't think I've ever looked at the Western Conference this year and said the Timberwolves are absolutely a lock just because of how hard it is to get into the playoffs. That said, I've been super optimistic that the Timberwolves can get in, mostly because I think that teams like Dallas and the Lakers and the Clippers are all going to have regressions to some sort of mean that I have in my head for them, really, because honestly, Dallas, I just don't think they can depend on young guys or guys who are playing a lot better than they usually do to consistently do that throughout 82 games.
You're the rookie, huh?
I'm just saying, we know that every year there's going to be a bit of a rookie wall, or even, and it's not even about Luka, but guys like younger guys, Jalen Brunson, they're expecting a lot. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr., we haven't seen him put together a solid year throughout his entire... I mean, I know he's only 2 years in, but we still have to see him do it for 82 games before you can confidently say that they're going to be this team throughout 82 games. And then, I mean, dude, the last time I saw LeBron when he wasn't in the finals, I was getting ready to go to my freshman year of high school. And so my entire adult life has been LeBron in the finals, LeBron in the finals, LeBron in the finals. So it's hard for me not to see him in the playoffs even. That's like, this Lakers team is probably the roughest cast he's had around him. And then you've got a team like the Clippers. They're playing really, really well, but they don't have that superstar when teams go sideways, when they have an injury in January that can pull them out of it. No offense to Lou Williams or to Tobias Harris or any of those guys, because I like their roster, but they just don't have that stud that can kind of pull through any kind of problems that you kind of expect for a team to have a little bit throughout an NBA season. Something's going to go sideways for a month, you know? And they don't have an all-star that can kind of lead them through that. And so for those three teams, I think there's going to be a little bit of regression, and that's when I think teams like the Pelicans, teams like the Wolves swoop in on those playoff spots.
I can dig that. I mean, you're right there on the outskirts, and the way you guys are playing recently with that 9-4 stretch, that signifies to me that you guys have figured something out and you get it clicking. And because the team is being, you know, formed so quickly on the fly, I don't think other teams will be able to scout you enough to really stop you at this point of the game. So I definitely see you guys getting in probably as high as the 16th, I would think, just with the talent that's there. And especially with the fact that if Carl Anthony Towns continues to make that leap where now it's, hey, give him a damn ball, everyone got the way and he's dominating. Well, I mean, how many other teams can you know compete with that when they're going small? In terms of giving someone the damn ball and going to work, I do have a question for you. When you look at the Warriors, you know, we've got the three super scorers who are out there right now, KD, Steph, and Klay. Can you give me an order of fear level? Like, who do you fear going off?
The fear level right now is still Curry, Thompson, Durant.
You put KD at three? I mean, hey, I definitely hear your reasoning, but just the fact that you said that, there's going to be a lot of KD truths out there. We're going to light this podcast up with the bitches.
That's good. That's good. Keep coming at me. Keep listening to the show, because that's you listening to the show helps me more than any words are going to hurt me, is the bottom line. But on a more realistic note, the two things that scare me the most when teams come in against the Timberwolves are teams that can really shoot the ball well and teams that are going to move the ball well. Because the Timberwolves can beat any team in the NBA can beat a team that really needs one guy to score, right?
Right.
But when you have the Warriors come in, the problem is that they don't need one guy to score. And moreover, Kevin Durant is perfectly fine with having 22 points and helping Klay Thompson and Curry really go off. I mean, you hear him say stuff like he wants to be a more well-rounded player. He doesn't want to be the guy who scores 50 points for his team. That's not a need for him. It's not really a crazy desire for him to go insanely off. He can do it. He definitely can. But that's not a need for him. And so I feel like he is more of a guy who's going to hurt the Timberwolves with his defensive play and make some shots, but also really create for Steph and for Klay. And then on the other side, the Timberwolves' defense from three still isn't that great, and they have never been a good team defensively from the three-point range with this cast under guys like Towns and Wiggins. And so those two guys being able to truly stretch the floor to 28, 29 feet, playing that level of or that length of defense for the Timberwolves is really going to be a problem. And it has been a problem against the Warriors. And so Klay and Steph are just built to be a real problem for this team. And so that's why the fear scale is higher for them, is that while Durant could probably score 40 on the Timberwolves just with the way their defense have played, I think there's some things they can do to combat with Covington on this team. You can try and throw Covington. You can try and double Durant with a couple different guys, and they might have some success. With the backcourt the way it's set up and with the way that the Timberwolves struggle defending the three, I just don't know if there's a good way to attack the Warriors with the defense the Timberwolves have as far as Klay and Thompson.
Well, you know, being someone who I remember watching the Timberwolves Timberwolves-Lakers Western Conference Finals back when it was Kobe and Shaq versus KG, and I was rooting for the Timberwolves because my team was trash and they weren't in the playoffs. and
because you should always root against the Lakers.
Always, you know that, baby. Every time. I remember thinking, like, wow, like to have a guy like Kevin Garnett, a guy you can give the ball to and say, carry us. I always envy, you know what I mean? I always wanted that guy. And then I was thinking about, oh, yeah, Wally Zerbia, you got Troy Hudson. I think he has free will at the time, Sam Cassell. I remember thinking, like, that's a real team. You got veterans, you got guys that can take over the game, but it's all around that fulcrum. And now I look at what the current Warriors have, and, you know, from what you just said about the impression you get when you look at the way the scorers are set up, where you have Steph, Klay, and KD, who at any time can go off. But they're unselfish and are constantly looking to get the other guy their shot as well. So I feel really grateful as a Warriors fan from how far we've come to where we are now. I feel like we have three Kevin Garnetts. I mean, not really, but, you know, as far as, like, you know, as far as maybe five with Draymond and Boogie there. But what really is tough as a fan sometimes is these regular season games where you're not sure, like, hey, do the Warriors care about tonight's game? Are they going to get it? We'll kind of walk through and then someone will, you know what, pretty much. much at hand, you still want to be entertained when you're watching the game, and it hurts me to see your team lose. Even if you know that, as far as the big picture, it doesn't matter that much, but you still want to see your team go out there and dominate. And I guess the Timberwolves, this is a team where we can't sleepwalk. Like, the Timberwolves are a good team, so I'm hoping my team comes out there, you know, with a sense of urgency and, you know, no injuries, hopefully, but you guys are a real test.
Hopefully they will be able to really push the Warriors. We're going to get into some of the specific matchups. I want to talk about Towns and how the Warriors plan on defending a guy like Towns. First, we're going to get to a quick break for some sponsors. Timberwolves and Warriors taking each other on primetime Monday night game in the Oracle Arena. Timberwolves are trying to recover from that Portland Trailblazers loss while the Warriors are on a three-game winning streak. And we're talking to Daniel Hardy. He is a writer at SB Nation covering the Warriors, and he's giving us an inside look at the Golden State Warriors. We've had a nice conversation about kind of these two teams and these two franchises. Now, this game specifically, I really would be interested to know, how are the Warriors game planning? What's the best game plan for the Warriors versus Towns? Because that kind of seems to be where this is all heading. Every time they meet up, that's really the Achilles heel for the Warriors, is what Towns does and how he's able to attack their front court. What can they do to try and slow him down?
Man, you know what bothers me about Towns? He's a great player. What bothers me about him is the dude is such a good rebounder, and we're not a good rebounding team. There's going to be like at least five possessions where it's like, you know, DeRozan shoots it, misses it. Towns with the rebound, puts it back up, misses it, gets it back again, and dunks it. And like five times, you're just like, wow, he just dominated our whole front line, especially if Draymond doesn't play. But this is what I've noticed about how the Warriors usually play Big Cat. They're going to, well, first of all, if Draymond plays, it's a lot easier, obviously, because we don't necessarily have to double all the time. But let's say Draymond can't go. That means we're probably going to have to get the matchup to Kevon Looney, who is really an effective defender, although a bit undersized. He's got long arms, amazing shoulders. He's pretty tough down there. But he's not only more of a power forward. So I guess a true center like Cat, it's just, you know, as far as matchups go, it's going to be tough for him. So usually what happens is the first quarter or two, the Warriors play straight up, and they want to see if Big Cat's feeling it and if Big Cat's making shots. You'll see in the second half, when the Warriors want to start going up for their kill shot, they're going to, like, you know, raise the tempo, raise the pace. That means when Carl Anthony gets the ball on the block, you're going to see Iguodala, Curry, Clay digging in, swiping, trying to force him to make a quicker decision. The hope is Big Cat gets flustered, throws some garbage at the rim, we get it, we're gone. Or he gets flustered, throws it to a guy who maybe isn't the best outside shooter. Like, I'll take my chances with Jeff Teague or Derrick Rose taking a contested, you know, three-pointer over Big Cat working, you know, at will on the block. So that double team comes down, Big Cat swings it out. Hopefully Jeff Teague misses the three, we get the brick, and now we're off to the races again. And now you do that two or three, four times in a row, the Warriors' offense is so deadly, those could all be made threes on the other end. That's a 12-0 run. That's the game plan. Now with Draymond, again, we probably want to play that single and, you know, kind of stay home there, which may work in Big Cat's favor and may not. You know, Draymond's pretty good, although he has the size disadvantage there. So my question is, I guess to tips probably, is when you see the Warriors are swarming your main option, what's your fallback? Is it going to be Wiggins slashing? Is it going to be Rose slashing? Because where are you going to find that spacing is my question.
Well, and this is kind of dependent because he's supposed to play tonight, but this is kind of dependent on how healthy Covington is feeling on that knee, because as far as another option, I think that Derrick Rose, it could be something that really hurts the Warriors' defense, but Covington is really going to be crucial in this game to really spread the floor because he has been playing so much better offensively. I have this sneaky hot take where Ben Simmons is maybe a little overrated because Covington and Sarge, their offensive numbers have taken jumps now that they've been with point guards that can actually shoot from outside and don't have to be 5 feet outside the basket to make anything. And I think that it's been helpful for them to be around playmaking guards. But also, when you have a guy like Towns who can be a playmaking center, if you're getting the defense to pull a little bit inside and then you have Covington or Sarge out there, but especially the way they're playing Covington out there to stretch the defense and stretch the floor and take those shots from outside. I really need him to take 9 threes this game or 10 threes, really make an honest effort at really putting strain on this Warriors defense, because then that's how that's going to open up. They're going to get to Towns early, I think, and then they're going to try and collapse on Towns a little bit, try and make him play a little faster, and then if Towns can somehow bounce the offense back outside, that's how you open things up in that fourth quarter for Towns again, is by straining the Warriors' defense both ways. And Covington is kind of the key there.
Oh, Covington can shoot, man. I remember him in Philly. That guy was lights out. Like, he's a real sniper. So
it's been lovely having him on the team. For a team that was worst in the NBA in basically every three-point category, having a guy like Covington around with this kind of resurgence that the Timberwolves have had from three-point land has just been – it's been like a cold cup of water in the desert. It's been very refreshing for the Timberwolves faithful to watch him play.
Wait, so who's your point guard? Is it D-Rose or Teague?
That's a fantastic question. Can I say both? I mean, they both do very different things very well. Teague is averaging about 8 assists a game, right around 8 assists a game. He's one of the top, as far as guards, he's one of the top assisters per game. And he's done a good – I know that there are definitely plays where he's stagnant, where he stymies the offense, but he also opens stuff up for teammates, and he's spreading the ball around. And then you have Rose, who is really good at pushing the pace and pushing transition for the Timberwolves, and just a great scorer. He's also played really – he's one of the more efficient point guards in the NBA as far as shooting from the field and from three-point range this season. And so having him shoot really efficient, carefully thought out baskets, but also averaging about 19 points per game, has been crucial to pair with Teague, who has had trouble scoring at times, but also is playmaking pretty well for the Timberwolves. I mean, you go back a couple games to the Hornets. He had 18 assists in that game, even though he only had 3 points. And I know people can pull up specific possessions. There was a possession against the Trailblazers where he passed up on two screens and then dribbled into like a triple team, and it ended in a turnover. You're just thinking, what? Why would you do that, Teague? This is why we don't want Teague. But then you look at the Hornets game, and he made plays for Towns and for Wiggins over and over again to open stuff up. And it's like, do they win that game in the fourth quarter if Teague doesn't have that many assists and if he's not playmaking that much for guys? I'm not so sure. And so really, they don't have a point guard situation where I can go without either one of these guys. And so I think it's live or die by both of them.
That makes sense. I remember you talking about the Warriors bench earlier. In terms of the Timberwolves bench, I know Tibbs is notorious for riding his starters' knees to the dust. So I'm wondering, as far as how is Tibbs managing the bench rotation?
He's definitely been better this year. And I think that's a wrinkle that the Warriors are going to have to think about a little bit in this game, is that you're going to see a couple different things. It's not going to be the five guys like it was last year. You're going to see some lineups. I mean, he's done a good job of playing two guards out there. You're going to see a bunch of times when Teague and Rose are both out there. You're going to see some Dario Saric. You're going to see some Tyus Jones. I pray to God you're going to see some Josh Okogie, although I'm not too hopeful about that. But with Covington coming back from injury, maybe they did play him less than 37 minutes against the Warriors, and so hopefully you see some Josh Okogie. And they're going to have to try and defend a couple different things. They're definitely doing a better job making it hard on teams to defend because they're not staying to that five-man lineup, which is nice, because creativity, I've heard from certain good teams in the NBA, is always a good thing to have on your roster. I don't know. The Warriors are pretty creative. It seemed to work out for them. Hopefully the Timberwolves can adopt that too. But at the end of the day, while that creativity has been helpful, this game still is going to come down to the stars, right? It's going to come down to how good can Towns play, and is Wiggins going to keep going on this streak? A question for you, if Wiggins plays hot, is that the worst case scenario? Because I think that the Warriors definitely have enough – well, they have enough guns to outdo the Timberwolves, even if they're firing on full cylinder. But if the Warriors come out and Towns is playing well, and then in the third quarter, Wiggins all of a sudden knocks down four shots from – or two or three shots from outside – is that the worst case scenario for the Warriors against the Wolves?
Wow. I mean, I'm trying to imagine Wiggins hitting four shots in a row.
Don't be like that.
I'm sorry. Come on. You gave him a C-. Come on, bro. I noticed is that the Warriors definitely are disrespectful in defense. If you go back to the Raptors game, if you look in that fourth quarter, you'll see maybe three or four straight possessions where Klay Thompson flat out abandons Kyle Lowry at the three-point line. Like, doesn't even guard him. He just stares at him like, I dare you to shoot. And Kyle Lowry passed up on two of them. He made one, and he bricked another. So what happens is the Warriors are so, I guess you could say, arrogant in a way, that they want to get inside the opponent's head. And so if you're out there, Wiggins, and you see Andre Iguodala stop short away from you 10 feet and stares at you, I mean, how do you not shoot the shot? Although, percentage-wise, you probably want to, you know, drive and kick. So I'm going to look forward to the Warriors giving Wiggins the room to, I guess I could put this. They're going to let Wiggins destroy his own confidence. If he's out there shooting and missing, then he knows he's going to get his head. So I guarantee you'll get a few open shots. However, according to what you said before, worst case scenario, if Wiggins does hit those shots and all of a sudden we see the guy that LeBron James traded away for Kevin Love, it's like, oh, wait a minute. That's right. He was supposed to be a superstar. If you give him, you know, room to get comfortable, he can kill you. Then, yeah, that'd be terrifying. It's like, I mean, I remember the hype about Andrew Wiggins when we first came out. I was like, is Wiggins the next Scottie Pippen? Like, people were talking about Wiggins like he was the truth, right? So, yeah. I mean, obviously he still has some growing pains, but if he decides to be that guy tonight, that'd be horrifying.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too, is that just what's going on between Wiggins' ears, you're not sure which guy is showing up, right? I mean, it could be the guy who gives Iguodala the finger before he shoots that shot and makes it. Or it could be the guy who he takes one of those shots, misses, and then not only is he not there offensively, but he's just gone defensively too for the rest of the game. And he just kind of goes into his shell and he thinks about his dog for the rest of the game. And you're not really sure which one is showing up, but he's been playing really well and playing really efficiently these last couple of games against some pretty solid opponents. And so hopefully that carries into this game. The other thing, too, is that it cannot be underestimated, Wiggins in primetime versus Wiggins in just a Wednesday night game against the Magic. Spotlight games. Oh, he loves these spotlight games. This is one of the biggest knocks on Wiggins, is that these are the only games that he shows up for. And while he's done better this season, it's still really clear that he loves to come out when it's a primetime game against a big opponent. And so I think that's kind of one of the things that's in his corner as far as the matchups for the Warriors versus the Wolves. Going into this game, as we kind of wrap up here, what do you see happening? Who's going to take the victory? And what thing from the box score has to stand out for you to know that the Warriors are going to win this game early? What thing has to stand out in that first half for you to say, oh, this one's going to be, I mean, besides the score, obviously, but this one's going to be the Warriors game because X is happening in the box score?
I mean, usually we look at assist to turnover ratio. If the Warriors keep the turnovers down, they shoot the ball so well that, you know, they go pinball level and just crack it up really quick. But turnovers really can kill it because they can't get into a rhythm. They can't get into a flow. And you notice, like, if they get two and three turnovers in a row, the crowd gets so antsy, like a really, 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 like, neurotic, like, you know, soccer dad. Just like, what are you doing? Oh, my God. And then the players are like, okay, guys, let's do a little ISO. And then you'll see, like, Steph Curry do his, like, 10 dribble, jack up a three, or Kevin Durant, you know, doing his thing. And it's funny because the Warriors are so good, they can make those shots, but you kind of would rather them playing the free-flowing motion offense. So turnovers can kind of make them hesitant for stretches. But my feeling is if the T-Wolves come out aggressive early and get the Warriors' attention, it's only going to lead to a third-quarter disruption. The Warriors, like, if you come out in the first half and you really give the Warriors a problem, I don't know what happens. They drink the Michael Jordan, the Space Jam, Secret Step at halftime. That third quarter, they come out, and the pace is just blinding fast because I think they take it as a personal affront that you're trying to embarrass them, especially at home. So the game that I'm more worried about is that the Timberwolves are down 6 at halftime, and the Warriors are kind of bored. And the Timberwolves kind of keep hanging around. And in the fourth quarter, all of a sudden, the Timberwolves haven't gone anywhere. That's what I'm worried about, and I think that kind of game happens if they muck it up, force the Warriors into turnovers, and just hang around.
Well, and you talk about turnovers being the key for the Warriors. Steals are going to be the key for the Timberwolves here on kind of the opposite side of that, because their defense hasn't been great, but the best version of their defense is when they're able to grab a turnover as an offense is setting itself up, as a team is kind of getting in the spot where they're getting that shooter open that they want to find at some point on the perimeter or inside, getting a steal before they're able to really set up an offense. That's the way that the Timberwolves have set up their best style of defense, and it's led to some really good offense in transition, but it really just is the best version of their team is getting a bunch of steals as far as a defense. And so getting those early and often, it will be a key for the Timberwolves to kind of try and play really loose basketball defensively. Because I know playing against the Warriors, a lot of teams, especially teams with a lot of young guys, can kind of tighten up and, oh, I don't want to make a big mistake and leave Curry wide open. And so that leads to even bigger mistakes. Having them play loose and free-flowing and just aggressive basketball and getting those steals is going to be really important, especially early for this Timberwolves team. That said, I just don't know if they have the guns to stay with the third quarter that you're talking about for the Warriors.
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be really on Derrick Rose. Seriously, I think Derrick Rose changes the geometry of the Warriors' defense. Not in terms of his outside shooting, like you say, like a Steph or a Clay, but in terms of his downhill approach. If he is beating defenders off the dribble and making the Warriors collapse, then the T-Wolves can do some really nasty thing to us, because now no one's keeping an eye on Big Cat because Derrick Rose is flying a runway to the rim. And now, you know, he drives and kicks. Here comes Wiggins downhill, getting us into foul trouble. I mean, the blueprint is there for the Timberwolves to bring pressure, but I don't see if they're trying to force feed Big Cat on the block and get him going, which I think you're saying that they're moving away from. If they don't do that, I think they can have a more diversified offense, as opposed to Big Cat, hope you can score over, like, you know, three people at the same time, which, you know, the Warriors aren't going to let happen. So, and also with the outside shooting for the Timberwolves being kind of streaky, Big Cat catching it, posting it, and kicking it back out beyond the arc is probably not the most efficient offense for the Timberwolves. But if you get Derrick Rose shaking and baking, come downhill, Wiggins is coming, Teague is coming, then the Warriors are going to be like, okay, like, we're going to have to change the defense up, give DeRozan a little more, you know, attention. And now the T-Wolves can go back to the big man down low because we're way out there trying to stop D-Rose. So D-Rose would be my wolf to watch tonight.
Hopefully he's got another 50-pointer in him. Hopefully he can drop a lot of shots on this Warriors defense. Before we head out here, Golden State of Mind, that's where you can find Daniel's writing. What is there any articles that you have to plug before we have out here, Daniel?
Nothing in particular. Of course, you can check out the Weaponized Joy piece I put up. That's probably one of my favorite things to do. Just take highlights of how dope the Warriors are. I put a couple clips up, talk a little trash. It's all a good time. But hey, thanks for having me on here, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining the show. It's been a real pleasure. Really fun talking to you. And now hopefully everybody is properly prepared for this Warriors-Wolves game that's going down tonight. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.